Yo Pods, check out Meet Mitch and Leewood for award-winning barbecue, outstanding atmosphere, and your destination to watch all your favorite March Madness action. Tailgating for opening day? Place your order online and pick up on way to the game. Meet Mitch Barbecue, East 95th and Mission in Ranch Martin or Shopping Center.
Second half of the program begins right now with the two-minute drill. We head out to the Bay Area. That's where we will begin today. Dieter Kurtenbach, San Jose Mercury News there in the Bay Area is next, or is first, I should say. Dieter, how are you, sir?
Doing well. How about yourself?
Not bad. Let's start with some hockey. I love my Sharks. Long story, there's a KC connection there, but got a number of Sharks fans here in Kansas City. Tell me about the moves that they have made, really, for about the last calendar year, getting Kane last year, Carlson coming in the offseason, and now not sitting back, even though they're right up towards the top of the standings right now. Is this the best Sharks team, or at least the best chance they've had to actually win a cup?
Excellent chance to win a Stanley Cup. It all comes down to Martin Jones. They go out and get Gustav Nyquist from the Detroit Red Wings yesterday. Just another piece of depth for the bottom six. And even strength, this is probably the best team in the Western Conference, possibly in the NHL. If Martin Jones can get that save percentage up, he's currently 42nd in the NHL, sub-900 save percentage. The Sharks have a really good chance to not just get through what I would argue is a not that impressive Western Conference, but I think that if it comes down to some of the better teams in the East, they would spot up as well against them as anybody in the NHL.
Do they score so much because the other teams know it's so easy to score on them, so they end up leaving themselves vulnerable, or are they offensively just as good as it seems they are?
They are that good offensively, and frankly, I think they have another couple gears to get to, especially if they start getting the power play really going. The potential for this team's offense is incredible. It just comes down to defense. They're giving up a lot of goals. That's something they have not done under Pete DeBoer, their head coach, in a long time. And if they can shore that up, they're going to look like the bona fide real deal and probably the favorites out of the West. But that's a big if.
All right. Tell me about the Golden State Warriors and where they sit right now as far as their mindset goes. They got to feel really comfortable. Are they perhaps too comfortable with a Nugget team that nobody can figure out why they're only a game back? Do you expect the Warriors to coast easy, or could they let down and let the Nuggets buy them for the one seed?
Warriors have no inclination to win the one seed. You are absolutely correct. They're probably too comfortable with everything, but they don't fear anybody in the Western Conference, save for perhaps Oklahoma City on a weird night right now. They think their top competition is in the Eastern Conference, and frankly, there hasn't been that much proved to say otherwise. Ultimately, this team is going to spend the next 23 or so games figuring out how DeMarcus Cousins fits in with them. And if he can turn his game around, there's nobody in the NBA that can come close to touching what the Warriors have on the court on a night-in, night-out basis. But right now, Cousins is really struggling, and he's kind of pulling down the rest of the team with him. And even with that, they're still easily the best team in the Western Conference. Denver might get the number one seed. They might get home court advantage throughout the playoffs, but the Warriors know when it's all said and done, they're going to be in the Western Conference Finals at a minimum, and that experience that they've had over the last 4 years getting to that point is going to go a lot further than Denver having home court for one extra game.
I know it's about them getting their healthy. Draymond Green with the sprained ankle they don't think is serious, mm-hmm. and they seem to have come beyond the Draymond Green, Kevin Durant hubbub distraction that came about earlier in the year. But what about the Knicks and the Kevin Durant future and all that? Does that run a chance of creating a distraction for this team coming down the stretch?
If it had a chance of doing it, it would have done it already. Frankly, there is sort of a resignation around the Warriors. Whether that's right or wrong, we'll have to find out in the summer. But I think everybody came into this season with the mindset of staying focused on this singular year, which sounded weird at the beginning of the year, but as now more and more breadcrumbs fall, and it looks like Kevin Durant is heading towards the Knicks. All the evidence right now points that direction. Again, we'll have to wait and see if that actually happens. Breadcrumbs are just breadcrumbs. They're really locked in on this year, but perhaps not as locked in as they need to be because they're just so bored with the regular season and the competition.
And finally, for whatever reason, I keep reading stories on national NFL writings about the Raiders looking to make trades with all their first-round picks. Listen, let me know when they make a trade. I don't care. I know it's a slow time for the NFL. Does anybody in the Bay Area, do Raider fans, I know the ones that are like shunning them because they're leaving, but do Raider fans really get excited about this draft, or they just assume it's going to get screwed up?
They are excited about it, though I do think that there's a bit of hesitation to get super excited about it. Given the fact that the Raiders have no idea where they're playing next year, though, again, all signs point to them remaining in Oakland and staying at the Coliseum. That wasn't the case a few weeks ago. It has fallen a bit to the back burner, but it looks like John Gruden's the only competent one out there. And if John Gruden's the beacon of confidence in the Oakland Raiders organization, we got big, big problems, because the way he handled last year doesn't exactly bode well going forward. I'll say this for Gruden. They have a lot of draft capital. They are arguably the most powerful team in the draft given that capital, and he'd be stupid to not entertain every single option given this first round. Even if he's just throwing it out there as a smokescreen, the Raiders need to just act crazy, because sometimes other teams are going to act crazier around them, and the Raiders are not in the market for a quarterback, despite what they say. Other teams are going to be jumping to get to their spot in the draft, and maybe those three first-round picks turn into five first-round picks or six. Who knows? You have to entertain that option, because the Raiders have a lot more than one or two holes they need to fill on that roster.
Dieter Kirkenbach in the Bay Area. Great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. Have a great week.
Anytime, you too.
This is where you find Jason Anderson, ESPN 680 in Louisville, Kentucky. Jason, how are you, buddy?
I am fine, Soren. How are you?
Good. How good are the Kentucky Wildcats now? They continue to climb in the polls. Is this a team that is good enough to stand toe-to-toe with Duke, despite the way they got humiliated by him before the season began?
I think they are now. I think Kentucky fans, or at least maybe the Kentucky players, would like another shot at Duke. Now, they would like that to be in the championship game and not necessarily like the Elite Eight or, you know, even in the national semifinal. But if it happened, I think they would relish the opportunity to get a little payback there. I think when, you know, we look back at that first game, I think that was a team in Kentucky that thought they were a lot better than they were. And they stepped on the court thinking it was going to be fun and games, and then they got punched in the mouth, and I think they just wanted to run and hide. Since then, they've become a really good team. A lot of the pieces fit, which is one of the things I thought about this team that was better than a year ago. And, you know, last 10 games, P.J. Washington is playing like the SEC Player of the Year. He's, you know, averaging over 21 points per game in those 10 games. He had only four games in his career, Soren, in which he had 20 points. Heading into the last 10 games, he's got eight in the last 10 games alone, shooting 52% from the field and 53% from behind the arc. So he's been a huge difference maker for this Kentucky team, just simply playing the way that people would hope that he would play, but I think even taking it to another level. So they've got the pieces, and they're playing really well at the right time. Led Missouri by 20, led Tennessee by 24, led Auburn on Saturday by 33. I mean, that's the last three games they've played. They've been dominant.
They're basically playing for a number one seed. I don't think LSU is going to get into that conversation, but a three-way tie with two losses between Tennessee, Kentucky, and LSU. They've got Tennessee head-to-head left to play, and that game is on the road. Who wins the SEC when it's all said and done?
I think it's going to be difficult for Kentucky to go to Tennessee and win that game without Reed Travis. He was so instrumental in guarding Grant Williams. He's such a tough player that brings that sort of tough mindset. Auburn isn't the team that's going to take advantage of Reed Travis not being there. Arkansas, who they play tomorrow night, not a team that's going to take advantage of Reed Travis not being there. The real test is what they look like against Tennessee without him on the floor. So I don't think they win that game, and I think that gives them three losses. And the fact that they would have, you know, the split with Tennessee, but they would still be one game behind LSU because of the and the tiebreaker as well. That would mean LSU would have to lose two more times, and that's not going to happen. LSU is playing some pretty good basketball, even though they lost to Florida at home in overtime. So I don't see them losing two more times, and if that's the case, then, you know, we'll see what happens with Tennessee. But I think it's going to end up being LSU as the number one seed. So
Louisville falls out of the AP poll that was just released. They seemingly cannot keep any lead. What's wrong?
I mean, they're just I think one of the things that's wrong is that they're just not that good of a team. I mean, or maybe I should say that the players aren't all that great. Chris Mack did a great job of getting this team to 16-5 and 7-1. But, you know, looking back, we see that they played the number 15 strength of schedule in the ACC to that point out of 15 teams. And they've played since then North Carolina, Virginia Tech, Florida State, Duke, Clemson, Syracuse, Virginia. They've had to play those teams, and they're 2-5 in that stretch. And so they might have had leads, except for Syracuse. They never had a lead. That was a dominant performance. Well done. I mean, they might have had a lead against Virginia, but that thing was smoking mirrors. You played well, I would say that, Sorin. That thing was smoking mirrors against Virginia on Saturday with a 10-point lead. They were hitting tons of threes, and they were getting dominated inside. Well, what's more likely to continue in the second half, them hitting the threes from NBA range or them continuing to get dominated inside? And that's what happened. Florida State was a giveaway. I think Duke was a giveaway. So it's one of those things that, do you look at how good they were to get up by that many points, or do you look at the issues that they've had in the second half closing games and trying to win those? I think it's more the latter. I think this is a team that's really played six or seven guys all year. I think you start to hit a wall a little bit. I think that's what this team is doing, is hitting a wall. And I think they're simply going up against better players on a more consistent night, and they just don't have the manpower. And another big part of this team, Sorin, is that, you know, they may have been through a lot, but I think they're mentally weak. I do. I think they quit. I think they break really quickly. And a year ago, they had so many games where they came so close to winning that they couldn't do it. And every Louisville fan, it seemed, and even media members were just so quick to say, oh, they've been through so much. Oh, they've been through so much. And even they would say, well, you know, we've been through so much. I think it's hard to get that out of their system.
Yeah, and we'll see if they turn the corner. All right, the Chiefs take Matt House as the defensive coordinator, former Kentucky his linebacker coach, former defensive coordinator with the Kentucky Wildcats. What did they get in Matt House?
I think he's pretty good. I know the Kentucky players really liked him. I know the staff spoke really highly of him. And I know, obviously, Kentucky wasn't excited to watch him go. He's had that relationship with Mark Stoops for a while. It is a Kentucky team that defensively has struggled, even with Mark Stoops as the head coach. And Matt House stepped in from a couple of years ago when they fired a defensive coordinator and said, all right, Matt House, you get the job. Mark Stoops was going to be more involved. And so there's a little bit of, okay, how much influence was there with Mark Stoops and how much was it Matt House? But Mark Stoops had influence before, too. I mean, he's a defensive guy. And so he's not just going to take over a team and go, hey, you guys work on defense. I'm just going to hang out here, you know, and just oversee everything. So even with his influence there, it was a vastly different team. And I think a lot of people will look at the secondary from Kentucky and they'll look at the defensive line for Kentucky. And let's say Josh Allen, they'll look at the three guys that are going to be drafted. They'll look at, Jordan Johnson that's going to be drafted. They're going to look at those guys. But they had a lot of those guys, you know, not this past year, but the year ago as well. And they had a couple of other guys that were pretty good. And then Matt House takes over, loses a couple of players, and they're much better at defense. I mean, so getting a guy that I think that good to just simply coach the linebackers, I thought it was a fantastic hit by the Chiefs and a loss for Kentucky.
Yeah, one for sure, and maybe a second first-round pick, the corner. I forget the kid's name. They had pretty good talent,
Lonnie
too.
Lonnie Johnson Jr.
Yeah. They had pretty good talent, too, so that was part of it.
But that talent was there, you know, before Matt House took over, too.
Jason Anderson in Louisville, great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. Have a great week.
You do the same, Sorin.
What's made Milwaukee famous?
It's Scott Wisniewski, ESPN 540 in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Scott, how are you?
I am just about over winter, but I'm doing well.
Yeah, good luck. It doesn't seem to go away in our part of the world. Hopefully it's going better in yours. All right, let's start with the Packers. What are the Packers looking to do in this upcoming NFL draft, and what kind of firepower do they have to get it done?
Well, I think, you know, they have quite a few draft picks. I mean, they seem to have stockpiled some middle-round picks over the last few years. It's the same old story. They need a pass rusher. I mean, that's their number one weakness. Beyond that, they need some depth at offensive line. I think their guards are average at best, so they need to do something there. Always looking for depth on the defensive line. I think they addressed the secondary the last couple drafts, and they've got some good players there. But, I mean, it's really in the trenches, and they just do not have a pass rusher that can be a game changer, or even not even a game changer, a game influencer. They need to address that, and whether it's through the draft or through free agency, but I think those are the places they're going to look first to improve this team.
All right. Tell me about Mike Moustakas playing second base. I just don't see it. Why are they – is this just like the temporary thing until they wait for someone to get hurt and then it all works itself out and they fit everybody someplace? Why Moose at second?
I think that's part of it. I think there's a multi-layered thought process here. Number one – is Travis Shaw's a guy that they project out at least for the next couple years to be their third baseman. They want to try to extend him. I still think there's a buzz that people don't believe Jesus Aguilar is going to be what he was last year, and they think Moustakas is going to play some first base. Travis Shaw will take some days off against some tough righties, which means Moustakas will play third. And the other thing is, there's two other notions here. One, Craig Council likes to try some weird things, and they've worked out a little bit last year, but sometimes he does some things that make me scratch my head. But his thought was, with the amount of shifts that they do, Moustakas is going to be helped out by having Arcia playing even with the bag, or in some cases even to the right side of the bag, which is going to mean that Moustakas doesn't have to have a ton of range. Again, I think it's weird. I think I just stick Shaw there. They also do expect that their top prospect, Keston Hira, should be up sometime in late May when they don't have to worry about losing part of, you know, his service time. And he's a guy that they think, if he can hit major league pitching like he's hit minor league pitching, becomes your everyday second baseman anyway. So no matter who's at second base, whether it's Moustakas, Shaw, or Hernan Perez, it's a temporary placeholder until they're able to bring up Hira, like I said. And again, I think you're going to see Moustakas play some third. You're going to see him play some first, maybe some second. We'll see how the experiment goes in camp. Remember, last year the Brewers did the same thing with Ryan Braun. They had him at first base for 2 weeks. 2 weeks into camp, they just scrapped the idea. So I still think this idea could end up being scrapped and Shaw ends up back at second base before they break camp at the end of March.
All right, and the Milwaukee Bucks just keep chugging along. We've talked about it a lot. You've talked about Toronto. You've talked about the other teams that are out there and going up against them. Where is Giannis right now? The fact that he's on a competing team, a team that's up there contending to be the top team in the East, and maybe after the Warriors, you could say that maybe the next four best teams are in the East. Where does it stand with Giannis being with the Bucks long term?
He continues to say that he has no intention of leaving. Now, that's the smart thing to do. I wish more players would keep things a little closer to the vest. I think it's going to come down to this. If the Bucks continue to build a team around him that can compete for a conference championship, I think he'll stay here. If not, I mean, every player who's at an elite level wants to win a championship. But he says he's committed to being here. We've been burnt so many times in Milwaukee with, whether it was the Brewers or the Bucks, with players leaving because they want to go to a bigger market or they want to go somewhere else to a different city or somewhere more cosmopolitan. But Giannis says he doesn't desire any of that. He loves the community. He's done a great job ingraining himself with the community, getting involved in things, much like Ray Allen did when he was here. And Ray Allen didn't want to leave Milwaukee, by the way. George Karl forced him out. So we haven't had a player like Giannis since Ray Allen, somebody who put some roots down in this community and wants to stay here. So I'd say right now I'd call it no worse than 50-50 that he stays with the Bucks long term.
Is anybody talking about their schedule? Because not only are they red hot, winning 10 of 11, and I think it's like 16 of 18 or something like that, but their schedule only has like four or five of the top, you know, say top teams in the East and West, only four or five of those left on the entire schedule. I mean, they should run away and be the one seed. At this point, we're now disappointed if they aren't the one seed at the end, right?
Yeah, and I think not only that, but they're going to be able to rest some guys in spurts and keep them fresh for the postseason. They added some depth when they brought Mirotic over. They just seem like they're going to be able to do some really smart things down the stretch and still perhaps get this number one seed. Even this upcoming, so they've got Chicago tonight. Then they go on a four-game Western road trip, which in the past has been doomed for the Bucks. But even on that road trip, they're playing Sacramento, Utah, the Lakers, which will be interesting because it's LeBron in Phoenix. So they're not even playing the Golden States or the Denver Nuggets or the teams that are sitting at the top of the West right now. They're playing the teams that are middle of the pack, or in the case of Phoenix, they're pretty much all checked out. So even this West Coast trip bodes well for the Bucks. They can come out of that 3-1, which, again, is unheard of for a Bucks team to go out West and win 3 out of 4.
Of the 9 other teams that occupy the top 5 spots in the East or West, of course, they have one of them. So 4 Eastern teams and 5 Western teams, they only have 5 games in their last 23 against those teams. That's mm-hmm. insane where it's at. They're in an incredible spot. We're rooting for the small market, so hopefully they get it done. Scott Wisniewski in Milwaukee. Great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. Have a great week.
You too. Thank you so much. My age.
Is the place to be.
Pete Fox, NBC Sports Los Angeles in Los Angeles, California. Pete, how are you, sir?
Hey, doing good, man.
Bryce Harper. I mean, the Dodgers, we've all been waiting on the Dodgers to go grab him. Has this been their plan? Get it down to whatever the next best offer is and then go top it, right? They'll take one more shot, and whatever it is, it's plus one with the Dodgers?
Well, you know, it always feels like they're kind of circling back, trying to make something happen, trying to improve. You know, I guess it kind of feels like, based on the fact that nobody else has been able to close this deal, that they figured they'd throw their hat back in the ring. They met with him yesterday. Dave Roberts was part of the contingency. But the story goes that they're not willing to go long-term. They don't want a 10-year, $300-plus million deal. That's just not the way Andrew Friedman does business. So, you know, they're throwing around numbers like $40 million maybe for 2 years with an option kind of a thing. You know, who knows if that would work for Harper based on the fact that it feels like this is a competition between the agents, you know, as to who's going to win this debate as to who's the better agent and who got the better deal between Harper and Machado, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't think it's a high priority for them, but they're without a doubt examining the option of trying to make something happen with him.
But should they be talking to Dallas Keuchel?
You know, that is something that has been, you know, mentioned quite frequently for the Dodgers as well as the Padres. After signing Machado, you know, the Padres for a minute were kind of in the conversation to sign Harper as well. Their name has faded out of the conversation a little bit, but Dallas Keuchel's name keeps coming up for both the Padres and the Dodgers as far as the need to get another starting pitcher in there. The Dodgers pitching staff, you know, is pretty stacked. They got a lot of names there, without a doubt. But the fact of the matter is that another starter like that with that kind of experience would definitely help them out.
All right, Kershaw's shoulder. How terrified are they? That's one of the reasons why to be looking at him. How worried is everybody about his health right now?
I'm just looking at Dylan Hernandez's Twitter. He works for the LA Times, the columnist covering the Dodgers, and he says, quote, "It's a touchy subject for the Dodgers." I think that's an understatement for sure. But what Dave Roberts has said is a, quote, shoulder kind of a thing, which, you know, the vagary of that also makes you kind of scratch your head. But he's also said that, you know, based on what the training staff has said, that they're going to kind of just reset with Kershaw. He's going to start throwing either today or tomorrow and then could still be ready for opening day as the starter. So they're a little worried, yeah, but they still feel like it's not that big of a deal. There's plenty of time for him to get up and running and good to go for the opening of the season.
All right, LeBron James is in playoff mode already. That's great. I mean, I guess, you know, if you're arguably one of the two or three best players of all time, you have that ability to flip that switch. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? You know, should he be actually like, hey, let's sit this one out and just call it a year? You're not going to beat the Warriors anyway. Let's just hold off and not grind out the extra games, be sitting LeBron James down, keep the tread off the tire, and be looking to make moves in the offseason.
You know, that is a feeling that could happen. Not right now. I think they're going to make a run at it over this next, whatever, 5 to 10 games and see if they can get on a roll. And then if they're still lingering around 500 and not, you know, looking like they're going to get into a playoff spot above 8, because as you mentioned, getting the 8th spot is not going to really do them any good. So I feel like, yeah, they will sit him if it doesn't go the way they hope. Doesn't look like they're going to be able to at least fall into that 7 position. But right now, I mean, this team is really an enigma. They beat good teams like Boston and Houston, and then they'll lose to teams like the Pelicans, you know, on Saturday. Not terrible, but they're not a good team, and Anthony Davis didn't play in that game either. So, you know, they lost earlier to the Cavs and the Knicks. So coming up here this week, they've got some, you know, Memphis tonight, Phoenix on Saturday. The one good team in these next 5, as you guys just mentioned in your last segment, the Milwaukee Bucks. So the Lakers conceivably could win 4 of their next 5 games, which would be a good step in the right direction. They probably need to win 16 of this final 23. So it's a seemingly fairly uphill battle, but LeBron James feels like, you feel like when you've got LeBron James, based on what we've seen him do, for example, last year in the postseason, he can drag a bunch of guys along with him. But the Lakers still dealing with some injuries like Lonzo Ball, and although he's not great defensively, he's been pretty good for them, and I think they're missing that as far as some of the key pieces to what makes this team a little bit better than they're looking over the last few games.
Pete Fox in Los Angeles. Great stuff as always, buddy. We appreciate it. Have a great week.
You too, man. Thanks.